Welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Vitelli, senior editor of Energy in the Americas for InfraLogic. Thank you for tuning in. Our guest today is Britta von Ossen, a partner and managing director at CRCIB. Britta, thank you for coming on to the podcast.
Thanks, Andrew. Very excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you on. Now, Crossroads listeners should be familiar with CRCIB since you're not the first guest from your firm. 2 years ago, we had your colleague Michael Tatarski on the podcast. But in case some need a refresher, can you give me an overview of CRCIB and where the firm's focus is in the industry?
Absolutely. CRCIB is an independent investment bank. We are providing financial advisory services to any sectors in renewables, the energy transition, and sustainability. We spend about half of our time focused on project financing, and that could be raising tax equity, debt, sponsor equity for projects, for example, in wind, solar, storage, carbon capture, RNG, hydrogen, etc. The other half we do is very traditional investment banking, so focusing on M&A, corporate capital raises, things of that nature.
And readers of InfraLogic are probably very familiar with CRCIB when we publish our semi-annual or I guess quarterly rankings for advisors. CRCIB is always at or near the top of the list when it comes to renewable energy deals. And Britta, what is your background both in the industry since you came to CRCIB before you joined the firm? How did you get into this space?
I have been with CRCIB for 11 years now. I joined as a vice president, helped implement our West Coast presence for the firm. And prior to banking, I was in development. So I was head of corporate strategy for Gestamp Solar, a Spanish solar developer here in the U.S. And before that, I was running the Italy operations of a German wind developer called WKN Wind, Kraft Nord.
I always find that so interesting. Some people come to renewable banking from another part of the banking industry, while some come from a different part of renewables. Do you think that gives you a different perspective than people who have purely a banking background?
I think starting out, absolutely. There are so many intricacies and nuances to the project-specific side of renewables and the development life cycle and all of the various components that go into that. So it's made running processes on the project finance side and the asset sales side very second nature because I grew up with these industries, I grew up with these technologies and understand what is needed to get them in development.
So it's definitely an interesting time for the renewable energy industry. There's the continuing momentum from the implementation of the Inflation Reduction Act. And at the same time, there's a lot of uncertainty, in particular, for no small part of that, because there is a new administration with a very different view of the energy sector than the Biden administration had. To start out, there's a lot of details we could dive into, but big picture, is it a fun time to be a clean energy banker?
It's always a fun time to be a clean energy banker. But one of the main reasons is because we have never had policy certainty in the 11 years that I've been doing this. There have always been sunsetting tax credits, changes of administration, new state programs and state policies that are changing, and all of that directly impacts investors and the capital markets. So in this job, we are continuously changing what is market, continuously pushing creative and strategic new structures and strategies. And so it's always fun to do this job. I think right now, renewables has hit a point of no return. The industry is going to continue growing and putting projects out there regardless of policy shift. I think both consumer demand and corporate demand will see to that. What policy shift will do is potentially delay or slow down or make more expensive the implementation of these projects.
So one of the major changes of the Inflation Reduction Act is the impact it had on tax credits, tax equity, with the creation of the transfer market. And that's allowed a lot of new capital to come into that market. How are you finding the tax equity market now at the moment?
So 2024 was extremely successful from a tax capital perspective. We saw lots of new corporates entering the space, lots of new tax credit buyers entering the space, and very many infrastructure investors coming in for a portion of the equity, whether it was a preferred position or one of these hybrid structures or the T-flip, as some call it. A lot of capital inflow in 2024. CRC has worked with several new corporate tax credit buyers and tax equity investors during that time as well to navigate the IRA and the complexities that go into that. What is interesting is now there is talk of changing this, and we really only had one super solid year of understanding the legislation and understanding the guidelines. So that continued uncertainty will probably cause some investors to pause, cause some investors to take a step back and wait and see what is going to happen on the policy side.
So do you anticipate the overall tax market continuing to grow this year? Do you think it might stagnate? Could it retreat? Or does it really depend on what we see from the policy side?
I think general consensus is that it continues to perform as well, if not better, for the near term. Even if there is a policy shift, general market consensus is there would be some level of safe harboring so that existing policy applies to projects being placed in service in the next 2, maybe 3 years. So I don't see a huge retreat, barring some type of draconian, you know, full repeal proposals from the administration.
What about a big tax cut? That's another concern that I've heard. If the tax rate is significantly lowered, it could curb the appetite for this type of tax equity.
It could. That could be a driving force in reduced tax credit appetite. I think in general, timing of passing legislation has continued to put support for projects that are placing in service this year. I think there is also some pullback from the PTC market, the production tax credit market, that goes over a 10-year life cycle of the project. I think both developers and investors are less confident in what the tax rate is going to be 5 years, 2 years, 3 years from now versus the ITC. So projects that are placing in service now are very much business as usual from the tax community.
Very interesting. It does seem like things have been constantly changing and developing in the tax equity, tax transfer market. So I guess this year will be no different on that front. CRCIB is also one of the most active advisors in the M&A market. And obviously, when it comes to M&A transactions, people are looking at the policy situation, what to expect there as well. What are you finding from the renewable energy M&A market? Is there still healthy interest?
The M&A market has slowed down over the last few years. I believe in 2021, 2022, there was a very strong seller's market, and buyers were valuing a significant amount of growth, pipelines that were in early stages, and that has pulled back a bit. The asset sale market right now continues to be very strong, but buyers are taking strategic approaches to what they will acquire. So it's no longer pipeline for pipeline's sake. It is strategic acquisitions in markets of interest of projects that they have confidence will move forward and will be built.
Do you think it represents an opportunity for potential buyers right now? Do you think it is more of a buyer's market?
I do. I think it has shifted to a buyer's market, both on the corporate and on the asset M&A side.
And how much of that has to do with the uncertainty we're seeing on the policy front?
A decent amount. We are seeing proposals for acquisitions come in with a lot of contingencies associated with what happens on the financing side. And that's hard for sellers to accept, especially when their revenue is driven from asset sales and they cannot wait several years to see what happens on policy to get paid. So buyers that can come in and take a view on what is happening on the policy side are in a very strong position to win assets and acquire assets and companies right now.
And are we seeing more interest and more activity on the asset side, on the platform side, on the company side? Where are we seeing deals actually be brought to the market?
Corporate equity investments are coming back in a sense, but there is still a bid-ask spread between sellers and buyers that has proven difficult to overcome in some cases. So sellers that need to transact, if they have a capital need or a parent that needs to exit, those deals are getting done and they are having multiple bids at the finish line. Whether or not those bids are meeting the hurdles that the sellers have in mind is another question.
It does seem like you mentioned 2020, 2021, where you had such a seller's market. Since that's cooled down, it does seem like we've been hearing a lot about bid-ask spread. It seems like sellers haven't quite come to terms with the fact that the 2020, 2021 reality was somewhat of an aberration.
I would agree with that. It is not lack of interest from investors. It's the bid-ask spread that is keeping deals from being completed at the moment.
And are you finding that some people who are seeking capital are ending up with more structured solutions, whether that's preferred equity, whether that's debt rather than a traditional equity investment?
Absolutely. The corporate debt markets have come up with some creative solutions that we have seen implemented more and more over the last few years. On the preferred equity or structured solutions, that is a very good tool to bridge some of this bid-ask spread, right? So if you come in as a minority investor in a preferred position, you are more likely to be able to stretch on valuation, given that you're protected from your return standpoint.
That is a trend that we've been hearing about even since probably last year, but especially now with the new environment. I think that's something that we will be keeping an eye on. Now, obviously, CRCIB does a lot of work in the traditional renewables markets, solar, wind, now batteries is becoming part of that too. Are there any emerging technologies that you find interesting or that you've either been working on deals, have been looking at, or expect to kind of have a breakout moment?
Carbon capture, we have closed our first deal in that. We have several more in the pipeline that we are actively raising capital for, and that has become a very significant portion of CRC's focus and business. We have been very active in getting smart and up the curve on that industry. In addition, RNG is a growing sector that we have closed several deals in now, I think 4 or 5 to date, and continue to expect to see growth in that. Hydrogen has been a little more tricky, navigating the ins and outs of the various drivers of tax credits there. But that is one we certainly have an eye on. And as you mentioned, storage, we now see as a core renewables technology.
What is it about carbon capture that you think is interesting and is drawing this attention?
So it is a very exciting new technology that is being deployed. The credit component of it has been around in one form or another for many years, but we haven't actually seen a lot of projects deployed and utilizing that yet. So there is the one that we've completed. There's several more in the pipe. Some of these are incredibly massive undertakings, you know, where you're looking at multi-billion dollar projects. And that's a lot of tax credits and takes a lot of parties to be able to come together and monetize that and make this efficient. It's a huge opportunity set in front of us. It's a growing opportunity set and one that we have been active in for years and are very poised to help navigate.
And you mentioned the fact that you just closed your first deal. I don't know how much you can talk about that if it's been announced yet, but I'd be interested in hearing more either about the deal or about what it took to enter that sector as an advisor.
So we started looking at this sector almost 5 years ago because of existing legislation in place at the time. And that was updated and changed via the IRA. But a lot of these projects have been in development even longer than some of the renewables timelines that you see of 3 to 5 years. So it takes a significant amount of patience and fortitude and kind of just continuous pressure to get these deals across the finish line.
Very interesting. And do you think that this could be a breakout year for carbon capture? Are we going to start to see that grow? It does seem like between the incentives and maybe the need to find carbon renewal solutions, it just seemed like it's starting to be on people's radar.
Yeah, we think so. We have it earmarked as a big part of our 2025.
And you mentioned renewable fuels, renewable natural gas. Why is that interesting at this time?
So again, there is a tax credit component to that, which plays very nicely in the traditional renewable tax equity investor and tax credit buyer space. So we have started to see several of those deals start monetizing tax credits in 2024 and continue to expect that to expand in 2025.
And then on the other end, you mentioned hydrogen. Hydrogen is something we've been writing about, we've been following for a long time, but it always feels like it's not quite at the point where it's investable or where it's on the verge of being investable. I don't know, maybe it fits into that bucket where you say it's the technology of the future and it always will be. What is holding back the hydrogen industry there? Do you think that there's potential for us to see more activity there? What do you think is stopping more deals from going forward?
We have investors repeatedly reach out to us that they are looking to invest in hydrogen, that they want that to be a core component of their investment portfolio. They like the technology, they like the portfolio mix. And yet, when they actually start digging into the projects, there are challenges associated with green hydrogen versus blue hydrogen and what this all looks like and how the tax credits play out of any of that. And so I think for it to really expand, the market has to get a lot smarter. We need a lot more guidance and kind of understanding of how these projects come to fruition. That's not one that's super high on my list as far as 2025 expectations of rolling out, but certainly something of the future that we are keeping an eye on.
The other technology that we hear a lot about, and really so far it hasn't fallen into the infrastructure bucket and we haven't paid a ton of attention to it, is nuclear technology. There's talk about small module reactors, something like that. I don't know if that's something that you'd consider a renewable form. Is that something you spent any time on, though?
It is something we have looked at. We have not closed any deals in the space, but are in conversations, again, focused on the tax credit component. Once you're an expert in renewables tax credit financing, the IRA really expanded that to a lot of these other technologies, and it makes a lot of sense and has a lot of similarities. So we are in those conversations, not active on any transactions to date, but certainly evaluating that market.
Now, we talked earlier in this conversation about a lot of the uncertainty, specifically when it comes to the political situation. I want to go a little bit more into that. I mean, what do you think investors are looking for? What could give people confidence? Is it what's going to happen in the first reconciliation bill if we see whether the IRA ends up on the chopping block? Is it going to be where the tax code ends up? Is it going to be what happens with these trade wars? I'm just a little bit curious what the main impetus is driving a little bit of the hesitation. There's just so many uncertainties out there that could impact this industry.
Yeah, great question. From the top, right? The trade war, absolutely on people's mind, absolutely something of concern to infrastructure and project investors. However, also not new. Right? We've been talking about tariffs on panels. Certainly tariffs on steel have been part of the conversation for quite a while. And so you'll find a lot of the equipment manufacturers and suppliers and project developers or builders have already worked this out in their contracts of the if-then clauses and the contingencies. Now, if things go dramatically different from expectations, you'll have a bunch of broken contracts and that'll need to be worked through. But in general, project developers have seen this coming and are trying to navigate it. And investors are requesting some degree of certainty around what this looks like, whether it's funds in contingency, whether it's contractual, et cetera. So we've worked through that with most of our clients and investors over the last years since the panel tariffs have been an issue. So that's not new. It is uncertainty, but it's not new uncertainty. On the tax policy side, I think the first draft of the bill will be very helpful to at least lay some benchmarks. Have an idea. Are we talking full repeal? Are we talking scalpel versus sledgehammer taking to making tweaks in the IRA? And once we have that, I think the next thing that will be really critical is the initial responses. and specifically the initial responses from some of the red state senators and congressmen and women who have historically been very supportive of these industries and supportive of the IRA and the benefits that their localities and constituents have received. So I think those will be two major talking points when that happens. The third is if there is a safe harbor provision. If there is a safe harbor provision that says IRA legislation applies for the next 2 to 3 years, that also gives people comfort on how to continue building the projects that are in process right now, and that those are not going to see some massive slash in returns due to this change in policy. Again, all of that are things we've dealt with in the past. And so those three things, I think, will be very telling in the upcoming months.
Well, Britta, thank you for that. And we've covered a lot, still a lot more we could talk about, but I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Britta, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
It's always great to have CRCIB on, and hopefully we'll have you or one of your colleagues on again in the future.
Awesome. Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning into Crossroads. If you enjoyed this podcast, please be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast player, and please give us a 5-star rating so others can find our podcast. Until next time, this has been Crossroads.